This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
Mr. Trump arrived this morning with the First Lady, Melania, and his delegation just before 8:30 a.m. The president spent 30 minutes with Pope Francis in private talks. The Pope looked a little bit uncomfortable at the beginning, but after those talks, they emerged smiling and much more relaxed.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. We'll have full details coming up.
Also, a suicide bomber kills five people at a police checkpoint in Somalia's semi-autonomous Puntland region. And in Kenya, three police officers were killed when their vehicle struck an improvised bomb near the border with Somalia.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, a suicide bomber linked to the Islamic State group has struck a police checkpoint in Somalia's semi-autonomous Puntland region. The attack killed the bomber and five other people, according to the French press agency, or AFP. A regional police commander says the attack targeted police forces at a busy junction in the northeastern city of Bosaso after evening prayer. The news agency for the Islamic State says the bomber carried an explosive device in his vest. A witness told AFP that the incident occurred near a hotel where local officials meet and may have been the bomber's original target before stopped by security forces. Also, there's late word today of a car bomb blast in Mogadishu. VOA's Somali service reports at least five people were killed and six injured. The blast occurred outside a small restaurant at Mogadishu seaport. Al-Shabaab claims responsibility for the attack.
In Kenya, three police officers were killed today when their vehicle struck an improvised bomb near the border with Somalia. The incident occurred near the Liboy border post as they were heading towards the town of Garissa. It happened a day after authorities warned of increased attacks by the Somali-based Al-Shabaab terror group. Police say the militants are laying improvised explosive devices along security patrol routes at the border. Kenya is part of an African Union force backing the government of Somalia. Kenya has improved security in its towns and cities to prevent Al-Shabaab attacks, but observers say rural areas remain vulnerable.
U.S. President Trump met with Pope Francis at the Vatican this morning. In a statement released after the meeting, the Vatican described the discussions as cordial. It also stressed the two leaders' opposition to abortion and shared concern for persecuted Christians in the Middle East. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with me about the president's meeting with the Pope. She also has details about another migrant boat tragedy that occurred this morning on the Mediterranean Sea off the coast of Libya.
Well, this was an historic day for the two leaders to meet at the Vatican. They had a fairly rocky relationship last year when Pope Francis questioned the Christianity of anyone, referring to the then presidential candidate who was willing to build a wall between the US and Mexico, questioned whether that was true Christianity. And at the time, the candidate, now President Trump, reacted quite angrily and said it was a disgrace for the Pope to say that. And then after that, President Trump commented by saying, if and when ISIS attacks the Vatican, the Pope will want Donald Trump in the White House. So that gives you some idea of the barbs that went back and forth last year. This was a way of putting that behind them, really breaking the ice and having some face-to-face dialogue. We know that they have many differences on many big issues, but Mr. Trump arrived this morning with the First Lady, Melania, and his delegation just before 8:30 a.m. The president spent 30 minutes with Pope Francis in private talks. The Pope looked a little bit uncomfortable at the beginning, but after those talks, they emerged smiling and much more relaxed. That gives you an indication of the importance of the face-to-face dialogue that they had.
Yes, also, I understand the Vatican issued a statement that says it is hoping for serene collaboration with the United States to help migrants and provide health care and education in the U.S. So what really is meant by the serene collaboration?
Well, first of all, the Vatican statement said that the discussions between the two leaders were cordial. They had a joint commitment supporting pro-life and freedom of worship and also working for peace in the Middle East and protection of persecuted Christians. But then there was this cryptic statement inside the Vatican statement saying it's hoped that there will be what they call serene collaboration between the US government and the Catholic Church to protect healthcare, education and assistance to migrants in the US. And that is at the moment, of course, on the table with the controversial budget that Mr. Trump is looking at in terms of tax cuts and perhaps major cuts to programs.
Also, Josephine, in another story coming out of Italy, the Italian Coast Guard has reported that 20 bodies have been recovered from the Mediterranean in another boat tragedy. Can you tell us more about this tragedy that occurred this morning?
In the latest tragedy, at least 20 migrants have been killed when they fell overboard from an overloaded vessel in the Mediterranean off the coast of Libya. The Italian Coast Guard just confirmed that they have recovered 20 bodies, but there are still many missing. The bodies do include young children, and it's quite a critical situation. About 200 people fell into the water off this very overcrowded wooden boat that was carrying more than 500 people. A lot of concern at the moment to try and save lives and find people that are unaccounted for.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome.
U.S. President Donald Trump's visit today to Rome brought parts of the center of the ancient city to a grinding halt, infuriating some locals, but acting as another spectacle for tourists to absorb. Views about President Trump on the streets were decidedly mixed. Jamie Detmer reports for VOA.
As Pope Francis welcomed President Trump to the Vatican for their first ever face-to-face encounter, Ava, a devout Catholic from Boston visiting Rome and the Holy See, expressed relief that the meeting had even taken place.
I think it's fabulous that the Pope decided to meet with Trump.
The leader of the Roman Catholic Church and Trump traded pointed exchanges last year during the US presidential campaign, with Trump accusing the Pope of allowing himself to be used as a political pawn by the Mexican government on the issue of migration. The Pope responded by questioning then-presidential candidate Trump's Christian faith, saying his plan to build a wall on the border with Mexico had no basis in the gospel. Ava said she hoped the meeting gave the pair the opportunity to make peace.
I hope they were reconciling with one another with respect to how they were quite adversarial in terms of what was said during the campaign. The Pope saying certain things and Trump saying many things. And I hope that they reach some sort of a meeting of the minds on several issues.
The Vatican expressed similar sentiments in a statement issued after the meeting, in which it said the encounter had been cordial. It went on to say it hoped there could be serene collaboration between the US government and the American Catholic Church, including, it said pointedly, assistance to immigrants. Trump received a tribute from the Swiss Guard in a Vatican courtyard when he arrived. A Vatican protocol official was heard by reporters quipping to the president that it was not like Trump Tower in New York. Pope Francis smiled at Trump when he greeted him and First Lady Melania Trump, but some Vatican watchers say he was not as outwardly friendly as he can be with visiting dignitaries. The Pope, however, joked with the couple as they left. Outside the Quirinale Palace, the Italian president's official residence, where a small crowd, mostly of tourists, gathered to catch a glimpse of Trump in the distance down a closed avenue, 50-year-old Rania, a Danish banker, said she did not really know why she was waiting.
I really don't know, because we will not any time come so near a president, because we don't like Trump.
She added,
I hope he'll disappear soon.
A young Canadian couple, expressing fears of terrorism in Europe in the wake of this week's concert bombing in Manchester, England, was more welcoming of the US leader. 22-year-old Samantha, a travel agent, gave her reason for wanting to see Trump.
I've just been a huge fan of him. I think he's, you know, he's real and he's unlike any other president we ever had.
Her 19-year-old boyfriend, Daniel, who works for a Canadian airline, said he hoped Trump's visit would help Europe become more stable.
We hope we can bring some more stability because Europe's been quite unstable for the past year or so, and even more than that. So, you know, we can hope he can bring more stability while also keeping things peaceful and not escalating things too much.
Nearby, a middle-aged British couple, sweating in a sweltering heat, said they'd only stop because the road was closed. The husband declined to be interviewed, explaining gruffly he did not like politics. Jamie Detmer for VOA News, Rome.
Since last August, more than 400 civilians have been killed and well over 1 million people displaced in the Kasai region of the Democratic Republic of Congo. It's the result of fighting between a local militia and the government. DRC's attorney general is now investigating allegations that a former government minister supported militia violence in Kasai. The investigation follows a New York Times report that two UN experts recently murdered in the region were investigating the former minister's alleged involvement, including praising the burning of a town by the militia. In related news, the UN says the crisis in the greater Kasai area has put 400,000 children at risk of severe acute malnutrition. UNICEF says even before the fighting, the five provinces in greater Kasai were among the poorest in the country. Tajudeen Oyewale is the acting UNICEF representative in the DRC. From the capital, Kinshasa, he spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua.
With regards to the Kasai, we as UNICEF, we are concerned because the Kasai is an area in itself that has been deprived of a lot of development in the context of children. And that continues to worry us. And overall, we estimate that because of the deprivation on ground originally and also the conflict on ground, that 1.5 million, including 600,000 children, will be displaced in the Kasai. We estimate that 400,000 children will be at risk of severe acute malnutrition. So this is why we are concerned.
Would you describe for our listeners exactly what you mean by severe acute malnutrition?
What this will mean, children will not have access to adequate nutrition. They will not have access to adequate meal, and that will have a long-term impact, and therefore making them more vulnerable to diseases and illnesses.
I understand that many of the health centers in the region are no longer functioning. Is that correct?
Yeah, some of the health centers have been affected by the crisis. It is an issue of concern for the health of children.
What action is UNICEF calling for as a result of these problems?
Specifically in the context of health and nutrition, one, we are calling first primarily for peace, because that is critical to development and care for children. Number two is that we are intensifying our effort together with our partners to ensure that we can provide nutritional support to children, especially those who are under five, and also ensure that we are able to provide nutrition treatment for children who are malnourished. And these are the key things that we are able to do currently in the context of the situation. But we need to do more because we need to reach more children. Like I said earlier, we are looking at a population of 400,000 children at risk of severe acute malnutrition. And together with the NGO partners that work with us, we need to upscale this. Last month, we had informed the world about our bigger plan for the Kasai. But within that bigger plan, we're actually mobilizing about $6.5 million to support the nutrition intervention in the five provinces in the Kasai region of DRC.
Now, has UNICEF made an overall appeal for its emergency response in Greater Kasai, in addition to what you mentioned about the emergency feeding?
UNICEF, as part of the UN family, jointly had launched a flash appeal, and that flash appeal is driving the whole response. And specifically for UNICEF, in all our areas of intervention for the Grand Kasai, we estimate around $40 million will be required to respond generally to the issues in the Kasai. And within that $40 million, around $6.5 million is required to respond to the nutrition emergency that these children are currently facing in the Grand Kasai.
Tajudeen Oyewale is the acting UNICEF representative in the DRC. From the capital, Kinshasa, he spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib. 20 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. A suicide bomber kills five people at a police checkpoint in Somalia's semi-autonomous Puntland region. And in Kenya, three police officers were killed when their vehicle struck an improvised bomb near the border with Somalia. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The newly elected Director General of the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, says health is a human right as at the center of his vision for the organization he soon will lead. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA on the first news conference given by Tedros since he was chosen in Geneva.
Former Ethiopian Health Minister Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus is the first African chosen to lead the World Health Organization. He beat out two other contenders for the post by winning 133 of the votes cast by 185 WHO member states. Tedros says the overwhelming vote of approval gives him the legitimacy he needs to implement his vision for the WHO, and for him, he says, the concept of health as a human right will be at the heart of whatever he does.
Half of our population doesn't have access to health care, universal health coverage. Health as a rights issue, an end in itself, and also health as a means to development. All roads should lead to universal health coverage, and it should be the center of gravity of our movement.
Tedros assumes office July 1st. He says he wants to accomplish many things over the coming 5 years. Besides universal health care coverage, Tedros says another major priority is to reform the WHO to make it a better, more responsive organization.
The campaign has ended, as you know, officially, but I think more work begins actually now. And I know it's very difficult. It's going to be tough. It's not going to be easy. And you know it, but I also believe that together we can make a difference.
Director General-elect Tedros says a first order of business will be to strengthen the WHO's ability to respond swiftly and effectively to emergencies. He says epidemics can strike at any time, and the WHO must be prepared. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
One of the largest cancer prevention studies of its kind has found some sobering news. Just one alcoholic drink per day can increase the risk of breast cancer in women. But researchers also concluded there are things women can do to decrease their risk of breast cancer. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
The study by the American Institute for Cancer Research was a review of 119 prior studies involving 12 million women, 260,000 of who had developed breast cancer. Lead author Anne McTiernan is a cancer prevention expert at Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center in Seattle, Washington. In 10 of the studies involving 4,000 women of childbearing age who developed breast cancer, McTiernan says investigators uncovered a connection between alcohol consumption and increased risk of the disease.
And we found that those women who drank an average of just 10 grams of alcohol a day had a 5% increased risk of breast cancer. So 5% is a small amount, but it was statistically significant. So it gives us more confidence that it's probably real. 10 grams of alcohol is like a small glass of wine.
In another subset of studies involving 35,000 postmenopausal women who developed breast cancer, McTiernan says alcohol was found to be a greater risk factor.
We found that there was a 9% increased risk for drinking that same amount of alcohol, an average of 10 grams a day of alcohol. Again, small glass of wine, 8 ounces of beer, 1 ounce of hard liquor.
McTiernan says the World Health Organization considers alcohol to be a carcinogen or cancer-causing agent. On the positive side, investigators found that vigorous exercise, such as running or bicycling fast, decreased the risk of breast cancer in young women by 17% and 10% in postmenopausal women. Moderate activity, such as walking and gardening, frequently was found to reduce the risk of breast cancer by 13% in the most active women compared to the least active. There was also evidence, too, that eating a non-starchy plant-based diet is beneficial.
That does not mean becoming a vegetarian. It just means eating a lot of fresh vegetables and fruit, making sure the vegetables are mostly non-starchy, that means not potatoes, eating dairy products, because they're high in calcium and they may have some benefit on their own.
To the extent that being overweight has been found to increase a postmenopausal woman's breast cancer risk, McTiernan says eating a diet full of fruits and vegetables can help women keep their weight down. According to the American Institute for Cancer Research, 1 in 3 breast cancers in the United States could be prevented if women did not drink alcohol, stayed physically active, and maintained a healthy weight. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Ihe Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth look at the significance of Africa Day. Africa Day commemorates the creation of the Organization of African Unity on May 25th, 1963. The historical and cultural meaning of Africa Day.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa.
VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
VOA. Hello, I'm Douglas Impuga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So,